Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is a Thursday. College football's great weekend starts tonight live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Peter King, Bob Stoops, Joel Klatt. Dodgers, by the way, are now in first place. The best baseball roster I have seen in 15 to 20 years, top to bottom, which got stronger with the trading deadline with Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. The Brewers hot knife through butter through the Giants. The Dodgers fly through now the injury-riddled Braves, and the Dodgers are in first place. I am not a homer because I live in Los Angeles. I will say, though, that it's nice since I moved to the city.
Yes.
Everybody wins all the time. There's a magic potion with this show. We should re-signed for decades.
Because we just bring winners here.
All we do is hang out.
Winning with energy.
That's what we have. Big win energy. That's what. Joy Taylor is with me today. So tonight we got a college football game. Great college football weekend. So we got Bob Stoops and Klatt in the show today. I want to start with this, though. I say this all the time, and I've watched this in broadcasting. It's amazing who we choose to support and who we choose to pick on. And that's why I tell young broadcasters, just don't listen to the noise. Believe in your content. Work hard. If you do good work and you're a good person, you will make it. But Matt Nagy's been in Chicago 3 years. He's made the playoffs twice with Mitch Trubisky, and everybody wants him out. Gruden has Derek Carr, a much better quarterback, top 10, 12 quarterback, in my opinion, in the NFL, and they're picked for fourth place. But y'all love Chucky, and I got nothing against Chucky. But Mike Mayock, the GM, and let's be honest, Gruden runs the organization, sort of like in Seattle. They got a GM, but Pete Carroll runs it. I'm not a fan of that. I don't think you should give guys this much power. Powerful, big, emotional guys with too much wealth and power screw everything up. But Mike Mayock laid it out yesterday about this season for the Raiders.
I think John and I would both tell you that we feel like we need to be a playoff team this year. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you guys are all going to put that in your headlines, and I understand it. But we're not – I mean, that's what the expectation is. We think we've done the infrastructure work necessary to put us in position, and we got to take care of business.
All right, the pressure's on. We need to be a playoff team. They will not. Gruden's fascinating. So I think John Gruden – knows football. I know John. I like John. He knows football. That's not the question. But personalities matter. And that's why I always said it was very dangerous to give John a 10-year contract. If you really inspect John's career, last 14 years total, he's made the playoffs 5 years. And the beginning of his career was better than what's happened recently. Why? Because before John had the big money and the fame, he didn't have as much power. His flaws, his vulnerabilities, his personality, which is he runs really hot, falls in love with players. It didn't hurt as much because there was he was on a leash a little bit, right? He had an owner, he had a GM. He didn't have ultimate power. If you go look at John Gruden's last 6 years, last three in Tampa, last three in Tampa, last three in Las Vegas / Oakland. His teams have all ended the same way. They've either been bad all year or awful post-Thanksgiving. Look at John Gruden's career in December. It's never been good. With the Raiders, it was its best. He won 41% of his games in December. The Bucs, it was bad, 38%. Raiders, it's terrible, 28%. He wins 37% of his Denver games. Yet the five winningest December coaches in the NFL since John came back are Pete Carroll, Belichick, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Harbaugh. Why? By the way, those are the five best coaches, arguably. Why? Because They have strong messages. Some are intense, some are laid back. They're all different personalities. Andy and Pete are different personalities. Sean Payton and Belichick, different personalities. That's not what bothers me. But I've always felt once John went to TV, he kind of became a salesman. I'm selling this rant to you right now. And John, salespeople sell whatever they need to sell today to sell the product. And that's not authentic, and that wears thin with players. So as we've given this guy that's highly emotional, that runs really hot, a 10-year contract, an ultimate power, his messaging falls flat and his teams erode over the season. He is a bad coach post-Thanksgiving. But I don't think he's a bad coach. That's why with Gruden, I never liked the 10-year contract. I'd give Andy Reid a 10-year contract. That's a different personality. I would give Belichick a 10-year contract. That's a different personality. I would never give Jim Harbaugh a 10-year contract. He runs too hot. I'd never give Gruden a 10-year contract. He runs too hot. But it's interesting now, if you go look at Gruden's career, last 3 years in Tampa, and with this Raider reunion, it's the same story. A bad late. Really bad late. And that's coincided with his wealth, his fame, his power. So, not all coaches. John can coach. But when you lay it out there, this year, I think this team's his worst team. I think they have the worst offensive line. They have a weird cap situation. And I wish him the very best of luck because I like him. But when he signed that 10-year deal, I said, he's not the personality to sign a 10-year contract. We've all worked with people. We've all worked with people, you know, that's a 10-year deal. And then you know, sometimes you fall in love with somebody. You marry somebody you think is going to last forever. A lot of times you date somebody you think you're going to have a fun weekend in Vegas with. And I think John is more the latter than the former. And so Mike Mayock laid it out there. We're a playoff team. Good luck with that, because I don't see it. I see a fourth place roster in that division. I like Tony Romo. I defended him forever when he was a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I did. I was always a huge Romo fan. I think he's a terrific broadcaster. But he's officially lost his mind. He said this yesterday about Jets rookie quarterback Zach Wilson.
I think Zach Wilson is going to be in discussion as one of the top 3 to 5 quarterbacks very quickly. You know, within the next couple of years, I think you're going to see him rise. I think he's unbelievable. His ceiling is so high. It's rare for me to say someone has the ability to get in the stratosphere of a Mahomes, but I think this kid actually has that ability.
There is zero chance that Zach Wilson in the next, quote, couple of years will be a top 3 quarterback. How do I know that? Because if Patrick Mahomes didn't win, he would be Matt Stafford. Crazy talented, big stats, massive arm, and we'd never talk about him. Quarterback is about winning. Jameis Winston threw for 5,000 yards and 33 touchdowns. What did Tampa do? See ya. He went 7-9. 9-7, Brady does not end up in Tampa. You watch Matt Stafford this year. He's past his prime. This is year 13. He's not in his prime. We've never put him in top 10. We don't even talk about him. He is going to be in every single top 10 list by the end of this year. Is it because he's better? Is it because his stats will explode? No, it's because he'll be winning. I'll give you an example. I like Derek Carr. Derek Carr's last 2 years, he has carried the Raiders and their horrible defense. Look at these numbers the last 2 years for Derek Carr. They're insane. He completes 69% of his throws. His touchdown to interception ratio is insane, 48-17. His passer rating's over 100. And when I suggest he's a top 10 quarterback, you mock me, you crush me, you destroy me. Why? Because he doesn't win. Zach Wilson has no chance to be a top 3 quarterback in the next 2 years. Here's what would have to happen just in his division. Forget about Justin Herbert. Forget about Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, all these AFC quarterbacks we like. Forget about all those guys. For him in the next 2 years to be a top 3 quarterback, he would have to win. So that means Josh Allen would regress badly. The Miami situation would have to regress badly. Not just quarterback, everything. I mean, they won last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua. New England, Mac Jones implodes. Folks, when you finish third or fourth in division, you are not a top quarterback. The only reason we have Mahomes won is because he wins. He gets to Super Bowls. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that would tell you Deshaun Watson and Lamar are way more athletic than Mahomes. Aaron Rodgers throws a slicker ball. Brady's more efficient. Mahomes ends up in Super Bowls. He's the best come-from-behind quarterback in the last couple years in the NFL, maybe one of the best I've ever seen. And so this is nothing against Tony Romo. I like him. But Zach Wilson has the worst coach in his division and the worst roster. The AFC East has never had better coaches that I can recall. Flores, McDermott, Belichick, A+. So love Tony Romo, but that's not going to happen. This is not baseball, where you can bat 340 for a lousy team and we write columns about you. That's not what we do in football. Football is about winning. Brady doesn't have the biggest arm. He's not the biggest quarterback. He's not the most athletic. He's not the best. He wins the most. That's why he's the GOAT. Joe Montana was not as talented, I'd argue, as Troy Aikman. He kept going to Super Bowls and winning. He was a GOAT. He was replaced by another guy that just won more than him. And that was Brady. And Brady's the GOAT. Do you think Montana and Brady are the best quarterbacks, the best arms? They just won the biggest game. So therefore, they're the GOATs. The zoo in the NFL, the GOATs, they just have the most rings. That's the way it works. So Zach Wilson's not gonna win a lot of games next 2 years. He's talented. Matt Stafford's been talented forever. We never talk about him. You put him top five or six in the NFL in Detroit, you get laughed at. I mean, literally, people would be like, hey, Matt Stafford, oh, give me a break. He finishes fourth. He finishes third. There you go. By the way, have you noticed what's happening in Green Bay? Now, we have all acknowledged there are two Aaron Rodgers. There's peaceful Aaron and passive-aggressive Aaron. There is swell Aaron and snarky Aaron. There is nice Aaron and not so nice Aaron. Interesting what's happening in Green Bay. We will get to that in a second.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
DoorDash, get more from your neighborhood. $10 off groceries and pet food. Try Dash Pass. I use DoorDash a lot. I used them before they were a sponsor. I really did. Peter King around the corner. So I've said this about Aaron Rodgers. You know this. I lay it out there. I have strong opinions on quarterbacks. I think Aaron, there's two versions of Aaron. He's a very complex guy. There's nice Aaron and there's a nasty Aaron. He turns on people fast. I think there's swell Aaron and snarky Aaron. I think there's pleasant Aaron and passive aggressive Aaron. He turns on people. We've seen him turn on his family. He ghosts people. He turns on people. Okay, it's not, you know, that's fine. Whatever. But that's what he is. You know, Brady's got all these long relationships, families. He's just different personality. And it's Aaron, I've always said, there's a statistic out there with Aaron that you can't deny. He plays great with a lead. He's a little bit of a bailer in tough situations. He'll bail on people. He'll ghost people. I've had multiple people that know Aaron, and that's just his personality. So when the going gets tough, I don't love him. When the going's going well, he's great. He's the best play with a lead guy in the league. And there's stats that back that up. He has very few come-from-behind wins, fewer than Andy Dalton, fewer than Matt Ryan, I think fewer than Derek Carr. How's that possible? He's not a going-get-tough foxhole guy. That's not who he is. That's more Russell Wilson's personality. That's more Brady's personality. That has clearly become Patrick Mahomes' personality, right? And so it's very interesting. Brian Gutekunst and Aaron Rodgers had a really bad offseason. It was bad. It was public. It was bad. But apparently, Brian's saying, it's been a pretty good couple weeks here.
I've had really good conversations throughout camp with Aaron and Matt, and I think the communication has been really, really good. And so as we went into this kind of decision-making period, I think, everybody, all the people that are kind of involved in that were very aware of what was going on and why we were doing what we were doing. So I feel really good about that. And the conversations that I've had with Aaron have been excellent.
Well, it's preseason, so they should be excellent. And you're picked to win the division, and they should be excellent. I really think, I said, Aaron's got two personalities, and we've seen this. I think the Packers season, what's fascinating about it is two seasons. There is the first 6 weeks. where they face several teams that are rebuilding. They face the Saints, and they face Detroit, and they face the Bengals, and they face hit-and-miss Chicago. They get a host Pittsburgh. Road game at San Francisco's no day at the beach, but they're trying to figure out their quarterback situation. That's season one. I think Aaron's going to be 5-1. We're going to be talking about back-to-back MVPs. Is weather's going to be good in Wisconsin. Badgers winning, Packers winning, Aaron a good mood. And there's a second season, and it starts Sunday, October 24th. This is the lowest-rated Packer offensive line I can recall. The PFF, the grading camps, put it at like 16-17. Not a great O-line. They lost to Pro Bowl center. David Bakhtiari's an elite pass-blocking left tackle. Could be the best in football. He's on the PUP list. He's not back until, I think, Chicago or the Washington game. The second season for Green Bay is brutal. Washington, best front in the NFL. Arizona on the road, great pass rush. At Kansas City, Seattle, at Minnesota Rams. A couple weeks later, at Baltimore, Cleveland. And a lot of pass rushes, a lot of good teams. The weather turns. So we've seen kind of a dual personality with Aaron. This is two seasons for Green Bay, and I can't wait to watch it. Because I think Aaron's going to have a great September 12th to October 17th. MVP level talk. He's going to be happy. O-line's not great, but you're not facing a lot there that could disrupt it. Second season starts Sunday, October 24th. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Kyle Shanahan kept his choice of starting quarterback very quiet during camp. Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance both took significant reps in the preseason. But even with Lance dealing with a chip in his finger, Shanahan won't make the final decision public.
I don't need to announce the quarterback. I don't think I need to announce the starting punt returner either, but I bet you guys can figure it out.
Is there an official thing where you have to announce it? Like
once the season starts, yeah. Like once you put the lineup, I think that's like when you officially have to do it, week one, and we know who's starting before the game.
Trey's not playing for five more days, right, because the chip?
Well, Shanahan's update on it says that he hopes that Lance will be back at practice Monday, but they will be cautious so he doesn't re-injure the finger. He was doing individual drills, like working on his footwork on the side at practice yesterday. Right. So he's still recovering from the chip in his finger. But I don't understand what's happening here. Like, injury aside, the preseason is over. Are you, like, trying to get an edge on your first opponent by not saying your quarterback is?
Well, because I think Lance and Garoppolo have two distinct styles. Stylistically, they're different quarterbacks. That's probably what he's doing. He's like, I'm just going to...
At what point does the value of that... what is the value of your team not knowing who the quarterback is?
I think the team does. I think he won't say it. I think the team knows. He's not telling us.
That's a lot of people to...
Well, it is, but if you go into a room and say, guys... We're not telling the media. We know what we're doing. We're not telling the media. You and I know. People keep secrets from us, and they manipulate us.
The more people that have to keep a secret, the less likely that secret is going to be kept.
Right.
Also, why is it a secret?
And by the way, it also doesn't need to... It may be a secret to the team except for people. The two quarterbacks, Shanahan and the OC.
Right, but I'm saying at what point does the team's lack of knowing who their leader is and what the plan is for the season, what is the damage of that outweigh the damage of your first week opponent not knowing if Trey Lance is starting
or not?
Well,
that's for a coach to decide. I think if I recall, they've opened up with Detroit and Philly. So I think they just love Detroit and Philly scratching their head. I think they love that. And I do think Lance knows, Garoppolo knows, Kyle knows, the OC knows.
Well, it might not even be up to anybody if Lance is injured. But no. I just think it's very strange. So Bears fans are obviously very excited about seeing Justin Fields as their starting quarterback eventually. But Andy Dalton is going to be starting the season. And GM Ryan Pace says they're going to take their time getting Fields into the game.
I just feel like we're just in a good position with Andy. You know, like we it starts with how we feel about Andy, and we're very confident in him and where he's at. So there's no need for us to rush Justin playing quarterback in the NFL. There's so much that goes into that, you know, and so much different than you'd even see in the preseason. Just the weekly preparation, seeing NFL defenses in the regular season, and all those things. And I just think the more time he has to learn that and observe that, the better off for him.
He's not wrong, but Chicago does not want to hear this.
I know. We're on such opposite sides with the starting of young quarterbacks.
I'm mostly an old guy.
I mean, they just talk about them like they're just incapable of doing. Like, we talk about Justin Herbert like this. Justin Herbert was fine. Figured it out.
Well, he's also great. I mean, we got lucky on that one. He's great.
Sure. I mean, lots of young rookie quarterbacks start right away and they figure it out.
Yeah. What's the stat, Ryan? We had it a couple weeks ago that no number one quarterback, I forget what it was, has had a winning season that started so many games. Other than Andrew Luck.
Yes.
Like, it's hard.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying there isn't some value in a little bit more time.
And I think Chicago's GM and head coach are on the hot seat.
I think, to me, this is what the story is. It's not about keeping Justin Fields safe. It's not about giving Justin Fields a little bit more time to learn NFL defenses from the playbook. This is about the GM and head coach wanting to win games right now because they're in the hot seat. But I don't know that necessarily helps Justin Fields. Like, I think there's a fair argument on both sides that Justin Fields actually being on the field and developing on the field reps will help him develop more quickly. And there's an argument that he needs a little bit more time to learn the playbook or whatever, watch Andy Dalton. I just think this is about winning games right now.
Well, they're going to lose their opener. And so
they open with the Rams, and then they have the Bengals, Browns, Lions, and Raiders.
So, I mean, what's going to happen is they're going to lose the opener regardless of who plays, and there's going to be this outrage to not play Justin Fields, and so they'll probably play Justin Fields at Cincinnati and win, and then he'll go to Cleveland and lose, and then I look at them as a 2-2 football team. There's no way you can line up a rookie quarterback and go to L.A. and Cleveland and win. Those are just losses.
But I don't think it's about wins and losses at this point.
Well, it is for Matt Nagy.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. But that's are you coaching to develop the best thing for Justin Fields moving forward, or are you coaching to keep your job? GMing to keep your job?
The whole league is about winning. So I think.
But when you have a young quarterback,
you're not going to win.
You're not going to win. But you have that grace mostly with the media and with your fan base.
Andy Dalton will go 3-2 through five. He will beat the Bengals, beat the Lions, and beat the Raiders. So my point is, it's not about it's about winning. The whole league's about winning.
Yeah, right. So that's my question, because this was my question with the Dolphins last year with the way that they handled Tua. And maybe Tua wasn't physically ready. I was not under the impression from what the Dolphins were saying that he wasn't physically ready. But you missed time for Tua developing last year because you had Fitzpatrick out there winning, and you didn't make the playoffs. And you're not going to win a playoff game, let alone multiple playoff games with Ryan Fitzpatrick, I don't believe. So do you feel like you can win a playoff game with Andy Dalton?
I feel,
because to me, making the playoffs and winning a playoff game with Andy Dalton is the only beneficial scenario for Andy Dalton playing this whole year.
No, I think I'm going to go 3-2 with Andy, and then I can hand it over to Justin. That's what I think. But I think if I start Justin for those first five, he could blow it against the Bengals because he's a kid. He just doesn't. I mean, we know.
I'm saying it doesn't matter if he blows it. Like,
it does, because Matt Nagy gets fired.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't matter for the development of Justin Fields. It doesn't matter for the future of the Chicago Bears if Justin Fields isn't winning now. Justin Herbert didn't win a bunch of games last year. Joe Burrow didn't, obviously got injured, but it wasn't about winning. It was about learning how to play the game.
That's right, but you can do that in week 7 as well as week 3. I want to win games. So I'm Matt Nagy. I want to go 3-2 and say, listen, I want the wins I think I can win. In their schedule, they got 3 W's.
Early.
Front. By the way, those W's, you start looking at their schedule, they're not really available. They get Cincinnati early. Yeah, unfortunately, they get, you know.
Then it gets rough. It's brutal. It's at Vegas. Then you have Green Bay, Bucks, San Francisco, Steelers. It gets rough after that.
So to me, I'm Matt Nagy. I'm like, listen, we have to win. That's better for the locker room. I'm going to go with Andy early. Because, I mean, once you get to Green Bay, I could argue they have the worst October, early November in the league. It's brutal. Green Bay, Tampa Bay, San Francisco.
It's not great. It gets a little easier later, but their middle of their schedule is pretty rough.
Brutal.
So the Dolphins have been at the center of the Deshaun Watson trade rumors recently, and head coach Brian Flores has been vocal about the team's commitment to Tua, reiterating again on Wednesday that he is their quarterback, and Tua said he's very thankful for all the support he's gotten from his head coach.
It means a lot. With it coming from the head coach, the support that I have from him, from the team, it means a lot. But, you know, for me, I'm just focused literally on trying to get our guys ready for next week.
It's such a massive distraction.
It's such a great opening game. Tua against Mac Jones, New England. What a great.
No, it's great. It is great. But I do feel for Tua in this situation.
Yeah,
like
it's, yes.
It just feels like a complete, like, screeching on the brakes. We're going into the season. It's Tua's season. We're going to get the first full, healthy season with Tua. No Fitzpatrick, no switching out for a veteran, no, all the bubble wrap is off. And then, but Sean Watson trade rumors. And then now you have to address that with the locker room, and you've got to address that with Tua. I think he's handling it great, but it feels like it's just such unnecessary drama going into the beginning of the season.
Well, I mean, he played at Alabama with Saban, so he understands being in the headlines, and he understands intense coaches. So, I mean, he's clearly, he's got the Dak thing where you're like, he's always good in the mic.
No, he's
always
good
at the
perfect.
Mic. I never worry about that with him.
No.
He's an adult. He's like older than his years. The question with him becomes, you know, they were clearly inside the building interested in upgrading quarterback. That's
right.
That's a thing.
And now it's public. So how it's going to affect him particularly personally.
Yeah.
Like I don't buy into the thing that like nothing ever affects you. You're a human being. Like that's going to affect you in some way. Now,
right.
Some personalities, it might be more than others, but it's also a locker room aspect of like, wait a minute. We had this leader, we had this guy we were moving forward with, and that is a massive change to switch from Tua to trading for Deshaun Watson. Like, that's not a small thing. So they've said they're moving forward with him. I don't believe that they're still interested in trading for Deshaun at this point either, because the asking price is absurd.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that Flores is being very vocally supportive of him.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Football Morning in America by Peter King at NBC Sports. You know him. Let's bring him on. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So you tell me the Tua Watson thing. I had a theory yesterday, Peter, is that the Dolphins were interested. And they talked to Watson's people. Watson's people leak it to make it public because they're trying to save his career and make it look like there's a massive market for him. And I don't think there's a huge market for him until this stuff gets settled. And then Miami's like, okay, I went public. Then they peel back. They don't want to implode the season. They got a young quarterback. That's kind of my takeaway on it is once it went public, Miami was trapped. But I still think they want to – I still think they like Deshaun Watson. They just went public. What is your takeaway on the last week in that situation?
I think there are – probably four teams in the NFL that want Deshaun Watson under the right circumstances. Will those circumstances ever exist? We just don't know right now. You know, as I wrote this week, Colin, I mean, and I know this sounds rash, but none of us have any idea what is going to happen with Deshaun Watson. Nobody knows if this is all going to go away. If he'll make some settlement with his accusers. No one knows anything. No one knows, could he go to prison? Probably not. But nobody knows. So how in the world could anybody trade for Deshaun Watson right now? Say you're the Miami Dolphins. They're certainly interested in Deshaun Watson. But if you trade for Deshaun Watson, you're going to trade Tua. So now you're going to go into a season having no idea whatsoever if the guy you just traded for as your franchise quarterback is going to throw a single pass in 2021. It's the wrong time to make a trade. It's the wrong time for Houston to be trading him. They have to suck it up and take whatever happens with Deshaun Watson this year, because no general manager in his right mind is going to make his best offer for Deshaun Watson knowing the absolute unknown that his season is going to be this year.
So we went back yesterday to 2015, and we found a trend that regardless of the quarterback, if you have a top two rated offensive line and a top three rushing productivity attack, back to Cam's 2015 Panthers, and then I forget the teams in order. It was Cleveland last year. It was Rams with Goff to the Super Bowl. It was the Niners, Garoppolo to the Super Bowl. And they were following. Then it was Nick Foles in Philadelphia. So we went 6 years in a row. If you have a top two graded O-line and a top three rushing game, the quarterback becomes less crucial. The quarterbacks were Garoppolo, Nick Foles, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield. And I said, this Mac Jones thing, this is the best offensive line I have seen in New England in years, and they have a really deep running back group. And I said, maybe it's not crazy. They're going to be a little more run-centric. I've seen this recipe work. I think you can win a lot of games with Mac Jones. Your thoughts on the move?
I mean, we'll see. How can anybody know that? Mac Jones has not played yet. So you're judging him basically by a few moments you've seen in preseason games where he looked very good most of the time. A competitive practice. He had a great practice he had against the New York Giants a week ago, ones against ones. And you're judging by what he did at Alabama, which is okay. Now, you talk about the Patriots. I mean, you know, I don't know if this is going to be their best offensive line at all. I mean, Joe Tooney's not there. Yeah. He was probably their highest graded lineman last year. And, you know, that's why, to me, I look at what happens in August and I say, we'll see. I don't have a great strong feeling about a lot of teams right now. I will say this. I feel better about the Patriots today than I did on July 27th, the first day of training camp, because I think Mac Jones has proven, you know, when he's gotten to the stage that he can handle it. But the only thing is no one ever writes, you know, after, say, Tom Brady becomes great, no one ever says, well, geez, we knew it on August 21st. You know, they got to play games to see.
So we were talking about John Gruden. I sat on a plane this weekend from Chicago to Los Angeles next to a 30-year NFL exec who knew Gruden and Mark Davis very well. And he said their relationship's not the same, is that John can wear people out over time. And I look at Gruden, and I was never a fan of a 10-year contract. I just said this earlier. There are certain personalities, Jim Harbaugh, John Gruden. They run hot. They're big personalities, and they can bulldoze people. And they're probably not guys I'm going to give a 10-year contract to. Not that they can't coach. They're both very smart guys. But the Raider thing to me this morning, Peter, if you're writing a column on the Raiders, is it going to work? Does it feel right to you? It doesn't. Even the cap situation with them, I don't like.
I mean, look, I was out there, but for only one day. And it's hard to really get a great handle on a team in one day. But this is, you know, what I see when I see the Raiders is every year it seems like they count on a lot of good young players who haven't done it yet, and maybe a big veteran signing or two in free agency. This year it's Yannick Ngakoue. Big money, and everybody is so excited about their pass rush this year. And I say, there's a reason why Yannick Ngakoue has been on four teams in a year. And at that time, four teams in 10 months or whatever it was. So, I mean, I'm not really fired up about the Raiders, quite honestly. We'll see. But, you know, John Gruden's 19 and 29 in his first 3 years. It's not all his fault. A lot of the players they drafted have not played to their college resumes.
Right.
And that is going to be essential for those young players to play significantly better this year than they have.
A lot of young quarterbacks, they've all at moments looked great. Tony Romo said yesterday, Zach Wilson's going to tear it up. He's going to be a top quarterback in no time. I think he has a lot to overcome. We don't know if Saul is a head coach. He could be. I don't know. Your takeaway on the young quarterbacks, I said we have a cultural change in the NFL where almost nobody outside of Belichick plays starters. So you start with twos, you go to threes by the second quarter. You know, all these young guys look fantastic. I don't know what to make of any of it. Do you have a strong feeling about any of these young quarterbacks going forward?
You know, probably if you were to look at the young quarterbacks who are going to play right away, you'd probably have to like Mac Jones the best because he is going to be surrounded by the best team. And you know, the Jets and Jaguars are two teams that have been horrible. And they bring in young quarterbacks. And have they improved enough across the board to not be horrible? That's the biggest question about both of those teams. And I loved what I saw. Everybody, how could you not love what you see in Trevor Lawrence in the preseason, particularly last week in Dallas? But having said all that, you still need a good team around you. And that's why I don't know that Mac Jones is better than Trevor Lawrence. I doubt that he is. But Mac Jones is probably going to have a better rookie year than Trevor Lawrence because of his surrounding, the people surrounding him. It's funny, Colin, I spent some time last week with J.K. Dobbins before he got hurt in the talented Baltimore running back. And he was so upset when he was drafted by 55th overall, when he went to the Ravens. And he wasn't thinking, I just went to a great team. I just went to Nirvana for a running back. And the saddest thing about the J.K. Dobbins situation, to me anyway, is that he was going to be a great player on a team that, without any question, is the best running attack in football. And now, because of that injury, he doesn't get to be that way. They're still going to be really good running the ball.
Yeah.
But you have to look at your surroundings.
Yeah.
And Mac Jones easily has the best surroundings.
Yeah, good stuff. NBCSports.com. You can see the golf shirt right there. It's Peter King, Football Morning in America. Great seeing you again.
Thanks a lot, Colin. Take care.
You bet. A lot of stuff today. Seattle's making noise up in the Pacific Northwest. Bob Stoops around the corner. Jim Harbaugh, big year. Will he turn it around? Interesting article today about him, the inner workings of what happened the last several years.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, great weekend of college football starts tonight on Fox. Let's check out the schedule. This is a really strong week. I like the Golden Gophers of Minnesota to keep it close tonight for a while against the Buckeyes. Ohio State will win. And then Saturday, Penn State, Wisconsin is fantastic. Alabama, they'll beat Miami. The question is how much. Keep your eye on Louisiana giving Texas problems. They're a really unheralded team. I'll take Clemson over Georgia. UCLA to upset LSU. Notre Dame beats Florida State. They can't name the score, but they should win convincingly. It's a very, very good week. And with that, a lot of pressure on Jim Harbaugh. The Athletic had a tremendous article on Harbaugh. It was a deep dive on what has gone wrong. Remember, he started 10-3. So the first 2 years, there were no complaints. He'd won at Stanford. He'd won at San Diego. He got to a Super Bowl. Nick Saban couldn't win in the NFL. Harbaugh got to a Super Bowl. That should not be law. Spurrier couldn't win in the NFL. Saban couldn't win in the NFL. Harbaugh got to a Super Bowl. In a division with Pete Carroll. Okay. Pretty good. And the article goes on to say, much like Gruden, too many yes men. He needed to go find younger, confident coaches who will push back, that can connect with recruits better. The recruiting's gone downhill, and Harbaugh really had too much power. So the athletic director sat him down and said, we're going to redo your contract. You got to win more games. It's about winning football games. So Harbaugh, who runs, he can bulldoze people. It's a big, strong personality, had this big, fat contract, and got rid of people who pushed back on him, got rid of coaches who didn't agree with him, and it went down south fast. So it's a fascinating article. Bruce Feldman came on the show yesterday, and I've said from about Harbaugh is that, I mean, look at his resume before Michigan. In fact, look at his resume up until year three at Michigan. Win, 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 win. Everything worked. He turned Michigan around immediately. Then about year three and four, it started going sideways. Here's Feldman.
The hardest thing for him is he had a pretty decent start the first few years. And then, honestly, at the end of 2018, it just kind of, you know, fell apart. And then it's been sputtering since then. I think he's had a hard time establishing an identity there, which is curious because he was always Mr. Physical Football, right? Tight ends, fullbacks, that's him. And he's kind of, it seems like they've kind of lost their way with that.
they have, and they've also struggled to land a quarterback. And I've always said about Michigan, they're not as good as Ohio State. If they can beat them once every 4 years, take it. They should beat Michigan State, and they should win their bowl games more consistently. But I like Harbaugh. I think because Jim rubs people the wrong way and he's kind of hyper-aggressive, that he turns people off. Urban Meyer can do that with people. There's already people rooting against Urban. But if you go look at Harbaugh's career, it's better than Saban's early. I mean, he turned around the University of San Diego. Stanford was the worst team in the conference. A few years later, they were a 41-point underdog and beat Pete Carroll at the Coliseum when USC was the best program in the country. He goes to the NFL. He goes to Stanford. He goes to the NFL. He gets to a Super Bowl. First 2 years at Michigan. Took over for Brady Hoke. 10-3, 10-3. They're not going to beat Ohio State. That's not who they are. They're not as good as Ohio State. But I'd love to see them get back on track, and I think they will. Hour two next.